Welcome to another episode of the Family Feud podcast. A new theme song for us, Shotgun. We decided to switch it up today for some random reason, but really digging into that Family Feud theme.
Yeah, I'm digging it.
I like it. I never realized how much banjo is in the theme song.
I'm all about some banjo. That's not true. I like violin more, but banjo's not too far behind.
It's true. But welcome to the Family Feud podcast. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined alongside Shotgun Spratling. We're going to be talking about, there's a lot of things that have transpired between our last podcast and this podcast, but before we get into that.
Including another loss.
Yeah, that's one of those things, Shotgun. But as a reminder, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and Audio Boom. You can also email us questions and submissions to our podcast at familyfeudpod@gmail.com.
Send us your emails. Send them.
Yeah, thanks to everyone who has been emailing us. We'll get to those a little bit later in the show. Shotgun, a lot has happened. We have been clamoring for change. Change has occurred. A loss has also occurred. USC lost to Arizona State at home, breaking the 19-game home win streak. That's over for Clay Helton and company. USC is now, the Pac-12 South hope is pretty much out of it. It looks like Utah is going to take it and run with it.
Yep. After they beat the crap out of UCLA on Friday.
Yeah, it's true. You know, then Sunday night comes. Ryan Abraham asks Clay Helton, are you going to make any significant changes? Helton essentially says, no, I'm going to wait till offseason.
I'm going to reassess after these last four games, and then we'll see once we get done with the regular season where we're at. But then...
Fast forward to 3 p.m. on a Monday.
Randomly, this tweet comes out from the USC account. That,
why you have tweet alerts, because if not...
I did not have a tweet alert set up for that necessarily, but it just popped up on my screen. I was like, wait, what is going on?
I did a double take. I was not expecting it. And I was not expecting, out of all people, for things to change, Neil Callaway. I mean, Clay Helton has said how much that Neil is the second father to him. This is he's essentially a family member that Helton had to cut from the team. Helton said that he couldn't look Neil in the eye for four more weeks knowing that this change was going to happen. So the change, Helton knew that it had to change with Neil at some point. But then the breaking point came on Monday. Okay, we got to make this change now. And then obviously, we haven't mentioned this yet, but T. Martin is no longer the play caller. He still keeps the role of offensive coordinator, but he's essentially demoted. But we asked on Tunnel Vision on Sunday, can Helton make cutthroat decisions? And he apparently can, which is at least a positive thing for USC.
Said he wasn't going to make any changes, but then he said he had a sleepless night Sunday. I don't know if Ryan's question prompted that sleepless night, but he met with Lynn Swann. And according to Clay, he went into the meeting and said, hey, these are the changes I want to make. That's a little bit in question. I know a lot of people think that maybe Lynn Swann told him he has to make these decisions, but that's not what Clay Helton said. So instead, he goes in the meeting and says, I think I need to get rid of Neil Callaway. He said it's the toughest thing he's had to do is to fire Neil Callaway, who, like we said, is like he told Bruce Feldman that he's like a second father to him. You know, he's like an uncle basically for him. You know, Clay was recruited by Neil Callaway at Auburn. Neil Callaway was on Kim Helton's staff at Houston. Kim Helton was on Neil Callaway's staff at UAB. Tyson Helton played played when Neil Callaway was at Houston. So a lot of connection there. You know, he's been close with the Helton family throughout, his coaching career. And Clay brings him in when he got the head coaching job from Western Kentucky, and it just hasn't gone, as planned for USC. The offensive line has been a struggling unit for the last couple of years. They just have not been as physical up front as they need to be. And that really came to a head, in the Texas game when you have negative 5 yards rushing, but also even more so in the Utah game, I think, where they just could not run the ball at all. They didn't have the negative yardage because they didn't have as many sacks as against Utah as Texas, but they just could not run the ball at all. And I asked Neil Callaway right after that, when you guys haven't been so successful, or why haven't you been so successful? He said, well, we've had some success, which I then asked him to define what he meant by having success, because I did not see that either. I did not see that from that unit. And he said, when I watch the tape and I see the positive and negatives, so we really didn't answer the question. And we didn't get to ask him about the offensive line. Offensive line played better against Arizona State. There were some big gapping holes at sometimes. But when you lose the game, they played better. But when you lose the game, you start scrutinizing areas where you've struggled, not only in that game, but you have a 2-game losing streak. So now you're going back to the Utah game as well. Comes out that Clay decided that he was going to get rid of Neil Callaway at the end of the season and said, I couldn't do it. I couldn't look him in the face for four more weeks knowing that I was going to fire him at the end of the year. So he's now gone. Tim Drevno takes over that unit. He is now kind of a, him and Mike Goff, who has been on the USC staff for 5 or 6 years now, was the interim offensive line coach previously when Clay Helton took over as the interim coach and fired Bob Connolly. He is going to be, both of those guys are kind of tag teaming the running backs and offensive line. So basically the run game is being put together now. And the offensive line responded pretty well this week. It seemed like they got a little bit of a pep in their step. You know, I think Tim Drevno does things a little bit different than Neil Callaway. He's a little bit more energetic, being a little bit younger guy. But he also focuses on technique a little bit more than, you know, the details of technique rather than, you know, the harping on redoing plays over and over, which is what the offensive line does in their corner by themselves. I think it's a little bit different, and just having a change, I think, is going to help that group out, because when you're struggling, you need something to change, and something has now changed. Hopefully they take that step forward.
Yeah, we'll get into the specifics more of the changes we've seen at practice this week a little bit later on, but just going over the whole Lynn Swann, Clay Helton dynamic, Lynn Swann went on Trojans Live, which is USC's, the department's kind of program that they do weekly. Lynn Swann was in Texas, called in. He didn't have to, but he basically gave...
Lynn Swann wanted to call in.
I know, which is interesting.
This was not like them reaching out like, Lynn, hey, would you like to come on the show? It was Lynn Swann like, I'm going to go on the show.
No, yeah. So when you look at that, you take that motive and you take it what Lynn Swann said. He basically gave a vote of confidence to Clay Helton and essentially told the Trojan family to sit tight. Like, this is what, if you're family, you sit tight and you go through these times. But I just think it was just interesting comments. I don't understand why you need to come out and do that with four games left in the season. You, like Dan Weber has been saying all week long, this is a turning point. USC could wind up 4-8. They could wind up 8-4, somewhere in between. I understand that Lynn Swann was probably trying to control the narrative a little bit. I think it got a little bit out of hand from their perspective after a second loss. But I think, I thought it was a little weird, especially after coming out of the coaching changes that happened on a Monday. Lynn Swann meets with Clay Helton on Monday. It's just, I think we're in the part of the season, and sometimes when coaching drama happens, you can't really take everything for face value.
Yeah, so there was more to this, but he came out and basically said that, you know, I have confidence in Clay Helton. He's going to turn things around. He didn't say, you know, he gave a vote of confidence. He didn't necessarily say that Clay Helton would be back next year, which is what we kind of expected from him, what we've been hearing would be said in the conversation. But he said he has confidence in Clay Helton. He expects him to be, you know, he expects him to turn things around. He said that he's keen on continuity. Lynn Swann said this. He's keen on continuity. He said you can't keep firing a coach over and over type of thing. He said you have to, you know, if you do that, you're basically starting over again. Some people want them to start over again, but he feels that, you know, you can't, you know, it's been basically like a 2 or 3 year pattern for USC since Pete Carroll left, that, you know, that they fired a coach, you know, within 3 years, I believe, of each of them so far. So he doesn't want that to be the case with Clay Helton. So they're at least going to, you know, he's going through the end of the season with the vote of confidence from Lynn Swann, which I didn't understand why you would come out and say, well, when we first heard that, you know, maybe he'd be saying that, oh, Clay Helton's going to be back next year. I didn't understand it. Didn't make any sense to me. Because why would you do that? And then if you, you know, somehow you lose by 30 points to the next 4 games in each of those games, like, no, of course you're not coming back after that. So why would you go out and say, yeah, they're definitely gonna come back? So I think this was good for him, just kind of hedging the bets, not saying necessarily that, but giving that vote of confidence to Clay Helton. They want it to be known that, you know, he's the guy. So I think Lynn Swann did as much as he could there, but some of the way he said some things were kind of baffling, like, you know, telling, you know, if you're part of the Trojan family, you should cheer us on type of thing.
Like, that really rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know if that's weird. It was just like, and I'm not like, I don't, I'm media, but it made me upset. I was like, why? Like, why out of all the people who should like put up or shut up, it's the fans right now. Like, I feel like if you're paying money, if you're spending your Saturdays and your time investing in this team, you should want a good product. And it hasn't been a good product lately. So why is the impetus on the fans? Like, I just, it didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I didn't think that you should put that on the fans. Like, well, you guys should be more positive. And like that's kind of the message that was sent. It's like, no, we're spending money to go to these games. We want a great product. So why are you not producing that great product? But, we'll see how these changes that were made on the coaching staff, how that affects the team. I think they're going to come out and blow out Oregon State. I mean, that's what the prediction I made on our live show. We'll see if it actually happens. We'll see if it actually happens. They haven't blown out anyone in ages, it feels like. When's the last blowout? I was going to say, what would you consider? Arizona State last year, I guess, but yeah. That wasn't even a full blowout. It was like a 20 points.
Has there been a blowout in the Clay Helton era?
Oregon State last year, they blew out pretty good.
I don't think they did. That was closer than it needed to be.
Well, that's true, but...
That's because Oregon State had basically handed USC the ball in a couple turnovers, I believe.
Well, Oregon State was awful. They were one of the worst Power 5 teams in recent history last year. Their coach quit in the middle of the season. So they should have blown them out much more than they did, but I think it was still technically a blowout. I'm going to look up the scores from last year.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I just remember Ryan and I saying last year, if it was any other team, USC would have lost. So who knows?
To Oregon State?
Yeah, oh. Last year.
I mean, they beat Western Michigan by 18. That game was close. Stanford, the 42-24 to Stanford, that's kind of a blowout with them, that first game. Kind of.
We'll see. But as far as
38-10 Oregon State last year.
That's what I'm saying. That's not a blowout.
Only beating them by 28 is not a blowout with that team.
No, not at all.
48-17 against Arizona State last year. I would say that's the only true blowout they've had under Clay Helton.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that maybe this could be I know we've talked about a lot, what's going to be the Arizona State game. I think this could be the Arizona State game. Oregon State is a good week to make changes because Oregon State, you can take care of. If you go up there and you take care of it in the beginning, you can beat this team. But the thing is, I've said this all the time, USC should handle everyone on paper. Yeah. But when it comes to the game time, it's just a whole different story. You know, so I've predicted a semi-blowout win. USC takes care of Oregon State. But even when I say that, there's part of my mind that's like, eh.
Well, there's always a part of your mind that says that with this USC team because haven't done the things that you would expect out of from the talented players they have. You know, with the collection of talent they have, you would expect them to do more than what they have done so far. They have underachieved, no doubt, with the collection of players they have. Granted, you have a freshman quarterback. You've had some really bad injuries. You know, you had to play your third string quarterback last game. You had no defensive captains on the field. You know, those things are a big part to why they lost that game last week. You know, I think if they lost by 3 points, I think the collection of Porter Gustin, Cam Smith, and Marvell Tell the third are worth 3 points. So they would have at least been tied. They would have won that game if all three of those guys played.
When you said this on Sunday, after the game, I was ready to roast you. I was like, boy, but but after rewatch, I semi agree with you. I think not having Cam Smith and Marvell Tell, that duo, missing those guys had a big impact.
Yeah, some of those big runs that you saw, those were run fits. You know, you hear that saying, what exactly does that mean? Basically, going up to the line of scrimmage, every defensive lineman and linebacker has a certain area where they should be. So if the play comes into your area, you're the one that makes a play. Paliia Naiatiote got out of his gap a couple times. There were a couple times where the safety probably could have come over, or a couple times where, you know, a bigger safety, Marvell Tell versus Ajene Harris, because Ajene Harris moves back and, you know, it's a very tough move for him to make. But just having a more physical player there would have made a tackle maybe behind the line of scrimmage. And there, you know, a lot of things could have been different in that game, which, you know, I think would be worth 3 points if you have those three guys. And that's not even just those two guys. Well, Porter Gustin out for the year. Didn't even necessarily look at the pass rush. Pass rush was okay in this game. But, you know, it just seemed that the defense was playing was wounded for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you lose during the game, you lose Levi Jones. So you lose another option there. You know, Jordan Iosefa moves to middle linebacker in the second half. And they corrected some of those gap issues there. But, you know, now you're playing with Kanaya Mauga. You know, he played his most snaps in his career in that game. So now you're playing with him. You didn't have Hunter Echols. You didn't have Raymond Scott. Both those guys were not available for this game. You had some injuries. You had apparently some suspensions with those two guys. You were down a lot of people on the defensive side, and I think it had an effect. Now, they still could have won that game easily.
And that's what made me frustrated to you on Sunday. It's like, sure, this was a game where the talent on the field tried as hard as they could. Jack Sears did a great job trying to win a game for USC as a third-string quarterback, having no real significant playing time and going out there. And yet, coaching decisions lost this game. And that's the thing. Why don't you take the points? 4th-and-1.
I don't understand that one.
I still stand by my decision. You take the points. I don't understand why you don't do that. It doesn't make sense. So the only thing before we get into stock up, stock down that we haven't talked about, T. Martin is no longer calling plays. Mm-hmm. I know there's been a lot of talk about maybe Clay Elton had more of a hand in it than we think. Maybe it's a red herring and a Jordan Martinez says that. How much do you think the Clay Elton taking over plays will make a difference?
I think it's a change. I don't think that it's something that was going on. I know there was reports that, oh, Clay Elton's maybe. No, he wasn't. He wasn't calling the plays. I've looked at him on the sideline to see if he was calling the plays. He wasn't calling the plays. Now, he might have input like, hey, we need to run the ball here. Hey, which is what you expect out of your head coach. Your head coach should be making some decisions like that. But he wasn't, you know, he didn't have the play sheet out going, all right, we're running, you know, trips wide left, see banana slug, whatever, the UC Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz, yeah, banana slugs.
Banana slugs. So whatever, you know, the play call is there, he's not doing that. He was not doing that. Now he will be. So we'll see. T. Martin's still going to be involved in the game planning and stuff like that as far as an offensive coach. He's going to do those type of things, but he's not going to be the game day play caller. So we'll see how different it is. You know, there were all the question has always been the last couple of years is how much is T. Martin calling the plays? Clay said that, you know, T was calling 95% of the plays this season. Last year with Tyson Helton, there was a little bit of – he didn't really give an answer on that one. he kind of worded himself around that one where, you know, it seemed like Tyson was calling the third down plays, maybe the red zone, and Clay was calling the red zone plays. That's what we had heard, so don't know how true all that was. So it'll be different. And, you know, I think you'll see some different types of plays this with Clay Helton calling the plays with T. Martin now demoted a bit. So we'll see how it plays out and, you know, how USC calls plays this game and who are they going to really focus on. I would like to see a similar game plan that they gave to Jack Sears,
yes,
given to JT Daniels this week, because I thought they simplified some things. I thought they made it more simple on Jack Sears so they didn't have to do as much, whereas sometimes this season with JT Daniels, it seems like they've just given him a full, you know, what you would give to a, you know, if Sam Darnold, there was the same game plan that they were giving to Sam Darnold last year, or, you know, if Sam Darnold was there this year, not taking into effect that it's a, you know, a guy making his first couple starts as a collegian. So I think that if they give a Jack Sears game plan to JT Daniels, he'll be much more successful this week as well.
Yeah, I agree. I'm all for that as well. As far as T. Martin and his future at USC, I noticed in the morning on Tuesday, or I think Monday, that T had essentially scrubbed all his USC stuff from Twitter. Shocking with the assist, tweeted it out. And T was asked about it, and he said, I just wanted to put my family on Twitter. Very PC answer. And then when asked if he would like to be back next season, he just simply said, I love USC. So it seems like the writing is on the wall a little bit, that he won't be back. It's crazy, though. We don't know. But T. Martin is kind of an institution at USC as far as wide receivers and recruiting goes. So how that impacts USC going forward is really interesting to me.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, he and Clay Helton have basically grown together here, you know, at USC. So, you know, it's going to be tough for, you know, for those guys to separate as well. But Clay's already shown that he will make the tough decision, firing Neil Callaway. So he demotes T. Martin as well. I think when you have an offensive coordinator and you get demoted, I would say 98% you're not coming back to that school the next season if you get an in-season demotion. So I think that T. Martin is likely to be gone, but we'll see how it plays out. You know, we'll see. You know, USC needs him for his recruiting prowess as well, especially with some of the other guys on the staff that don't like to recruit. He makes up for some of those guys. So we'll see how they balance that, how Clay figures that part out. Right now, Mike Goff is the interim 10th coach. We'll see where they go to try to fill the vacancies that they'll have at the end of the season. That's something that Clay said he'll wait till the end of the season to do, but he also said that last week, so who knows?
Who knows, indeed. All right, let's go to stock up. First up, it's kind of an honorable mention. It should be stock neutral, given the...
There's no such thing as stock neutral.
I did mention last week. I had to mention it this week, and for a rightful reason. Talanoa Hufanga, he has done great stepping in as a true freshman, getting thrown in at the safety position. He played like a beast on Saturday. Mm-hmm. There was a 3-straight play that he just was all up in it. He needed to play in the backfield. I think he broke up a pass, mm-hmm, and then made another play in the backfield. That was in the fourth quarter. Just great effort. He has a bright future at USC, but then He breaks his collarbone on like the last play.
The last defensive snap. Before the kneel down.
Yeah, before the kneel downs. And it's so unfortunate because it's right before he goes back home to Corvallis, Oregon. I did manage to talk to him. I saw him yesterday after practice. He is going to Corvallis. So they're
nice
letting
for him.
I know. They're letting him go on the trip, which is nice because if you're going to go home, go home. So
Porter Gustin gets hurt right before they go back to Utah. I mean, it's tough. It's been tough to be an out-of-state player going back to your hometown the weekend before.
Yeah, so a sad stock up for Hufanga. He played a good game.
Why would that be stock neutral, though?
Because he's out for the season.
Wow, that's not stock neutral. That's a negative
and a positive.
Oh my, whatever. I've got Iman Marshall. I thought he played really well in this game. When he was matched up against N'Keal Harry, N'Keal Harry, I think, had one catch, maybe two. One dramatic contorting his body to make a one-handed catch. That's what it took for him to beat Iman Marshall in this game. You know, the rest of N'Keal Harry's production came when Iman Marshall was not matched up against him. I think he made himself some money with that game because N'Keal Harry is going to be a first or second round draft pick this upcoming year. So I think Iman Marshall had a really good game. He started. USC began the game with, you know, just him staying on his side, but then they started shadowing Iman Marshall on N'Keal Harry more and more. Even when N'Keal Harry was in the slot, you would see Iman Marshall come in the slot. Jonathan Lockett would push out to the outside on some plays. So I think that giving him that opportunity to go up against him, but also giving him that task. That's a tough task to take on, and Iman did a really good job. Biggie had a great performance in that game, had a really nice breakup down inside the 20-yard line on a pass play where it was absolutely perfect form. Didn't have his hands on N'Keal Harry or anything, but he puts his hand right in between the ball and where N'Keal Harry would be pulling the ball into his chest, and he knocks it away. That was a really great play there. He had a really good game, so I got Iman Marshall on the stock up, definitely.
Completely agree with that one. I had Jack Sears stock up, playing his first game. I already mentioned this, playing his first game as third string quarterback. He did enough to win the game for USC. And he, as he said at the after the game in his little media scrum, he proved that he can play at this level. And whether that's at USC, whether that's after he graduates and maybe transfers, Jack Sears proved that he can be a quarterback for a team.
Yeah, I have him at the bottom of my stock up because I figured you were going to say him too. So I have other guys on here. But yeah, Jack Sears played great. I thought once he had that 22-yard scramble to start the two-minute drill, he really settled in. The stuff they were doing, rolling him out and doing different things, I thought he started playing better. He stopped getting antsy in the pocket, which he was early in the game. He was looking at his first read and then getting scared about the rush even when he didn't have to. But he settled in, which is what you expect out of a first-time starter. There's going to be some nerves early in the game. He settled in. He told the receivers. I talked to Tyler Vaughns. Tyler Vaughns is like, he came and told us, he's like, all right, I got that out of my system. I'm ready to go now. And he did start playing much better in the second half and that last drive of the first half. Michael Pittman, I mean, this guy has been incredible for USC the last three games. USC's 1-2. Without him, they might be 0-3. He has been phenomenal for them. Last three games, 16 catches, 352 yards, 5 touchdowns. He didn't go over 100 yards this game. He ended up at 6 catches, 90 yards, but 2 touchdowns. The trick play where they toss the ball to Tyler Vaughns. Tyler Vaughns makes a throw to Michael Pittman, and he makes a contested catch. And that was a really good throw, the placement of it, but that's a contested catch when a trick play, a lot of times you hope to have a guy wide open.
Faked out the DB. The DB didn't know the ball was coming towards Pittman at that point.
Oh, really?
He did a good job not tipping the play, which was good.
Yeah, so Pittman, he's been phenomenal the last couple weeks. He has led USC in receiving the last three games, I believe. So he's averaging more than 100 yards the last three games and 5 touchdowns. It's really big. USC's needed that big play threat, and he's overtaken Amon-Ra St. Brown as the leading receiver as well. I'm not sure if that was this week or last week, but he's showing himself, and he's a guy that probably wants to leave after this year, and he's showing that he's a big time playmaker
for sure. I had stock up for Tim Drevno. I think moving over to his natural position as O-line coach, watching him this week, he just seems really at home and at ease at that position group, versus maybe with the running backs. When he was added onto the staff as the running backs coach, it kind of was the natural progression that eventually he'll move over to O-line coach. So seeing that actually happen, I think it's good for him. I think it was really interesting seeing the differences between him and Neil Callaway. Definitely less sled drills, less like physical exertion. I think he's really worried about their hand placement, their footwork, and really just more hands-on. And I think, as you said earlier, the players responded well to that. So I think having a change at that position is good. Having Tim Drevno there is good. And so I think stock up for that whole situation.
I got Jonathan Lockett on stock up as well. 53 total snaps coming into this game. You know, former starter at that nickelback spot 2 years ago. He had 57 snaps in this game. You know, he took over that nickelback role. Ajinay Harris moves to safety. That looks like it's going to be the permanent replacement now because Marvell Tell was out this game, so that's why they made the change. But now Talanoa Hufanga, as you spoke of, is injured. He's done for the year, basically. So Ajinay Harris moves back to safety. That's what we've seen in practice this week. C.J. Pollard's still there as well as a safety option. He played well in his limited snaps. He only played 4 or 5 snaps, but he did a really good job, you know, on some run blitzes and stuff as well. So he's still an option for him. But Jonathan Lockett, I think they have more. The question comes down to Ajinay Harris is going to be on the field regardless. The question comes down to, you have more confidence in Jonathan Lockett playing the nickel spot or C.J. Pollard playing the safety spot? And the answer for USC is Jonathan Lockett in the nickel. Fifth-year senior, getting his opportunity now. He played pretty good in this game as well. I didn't really hear his name called much, so that's usually a good thing for a nickelback. So I thought he played pretty well, and he's on my stock up too. Now he's getting inserted into the starting lineup.
Yeah, it's always nice seeing guys who've been there for a while finally get their shot. So good for Jonathan Lockett. That's all I have for stock up.
I got Elijah Winston as well. He made his debut in this game, the freshman. I talked to John Baxter a little bit yesterday about, you know, how he's using the redshirt rule with special teams, because now a guy like Elijah Winston would not have played last year. You're not going to bring a guy in and burn his redshirt at this point of the year, but now this year you can play guys for 4 games. So I talked about a little bit about Elijah Winston in particular, but just kind of how he uses the position. But he talked about Elijah Winston and said that's a guy who's, you know, has, you know, improved throughout the season. And, you know, they don't really have a scout team for special teams. They just kind of go and play, is how John Baxter described it. And he said that guy's beating the starters, you know, on the scout team ish. So he said that's a guy that worked his way up, and now we insert him in the game. We'll use him and use his 4 games. And so he's improved as the season's going on. And yesterday, he was in the one-on-one drills. He absolutely blew up Liam Douglas, put him on his butt, in their one-on-one pass rush drills going around him, got the entire defense fired up that was over there and stuff. So I think he's a guy that you're seeing improvements as the season progresses, which is what you're looking for from freshmen.
Already stocked down. Who you got, Chuck?
I mean, the easy one's Neil Callaway and T. Martin, right? I mean, both those, you're getting fired and you get demoted. You know, those guys are definitely stocked down. So we'll see how the offense responds to this. I mean, those guys individually is stocked down. But I think with T. Martin, the receivers, you know, are excited about him being there and being more focused on them. And I think maybe you'll even see the receivers play a little bit better. You'll do a little bit better in their blocking and stuff. That it was a focus when T. Martin was the receivers coach, but hasn't necessarily been the same since he moved to offense coordinator. We'll see.
I had stuck down on tackling. I think this is another game for USC defensively where their tackling suffered, and I think it really changed the landscape of some of the drives that Arizona State had. There was one play where it could have been a 3rd and 1. Instead, they get a first down, and you're not going to punt on your own 30. You know, you're not going to go for it on your own 30, so you're going to punt. And so that things where someone would make contact, but then would. You know, spin out of it, and credit to him too. That's his strength. But you know, that's the second time we've seen it. We saw it at Utah. We saw it now against Arizona State. And I just think it's starting to regress their tackling skills and their fundamentals. And that's something that Helton said that he does want them to focus on the last 4 weeks. And granted, when you have a Jana Harris who is a natural nickel, he's not going to be the same type of tackler that Marvell Tell, who's 6'4", is going to tackle. But I definitely think that wrapping up has not been an area of success for this team, and I think it really changes the course of drives.
Yeah, Ajinay Harris has to tackle more with his body because he's a smaller guy, whereas Marvell Tell has really long arms. He can tackle, he's stronger, he can tackle with his arms more. So you saw that on a couple plays where Ajinay Harris comes in the normal safety spot. He's filling a run gap, and he gets into the backfield even, and he just can't bring down a running back with only the arm tackle. Whereas normally when he's in space on a screen or something like that, he can, you know, attack with his full body to tackle guys. So you saw that a little bit, which is why I got captainship on stock down. Mm-hmm. You imagine the tackling would be much better if you have your surest tackler in Cam Smith on the field and also having Marvell Tell there rather than, you know, having two nickelbacks on the field at the same time. So, and the captains, you know, they have 3 defensive captains. All 3 of them were out for the game. They're hoping that Cameron, it looks like Cameron Smith will be back. It looks like Marvell Tell will be back. Both those guys practice this week. Obviously, Porter Gustin done for the season. But having three captains on the defensive side and all three of them missing a game, that's going to hurt your defense. So having those guys back will be a big boost for them. But I had stock down on the captainship. Ajinay Harris actually took the spot of Porter Gustin with the captains walking out before the game. So good for him to earn that C on his chest as well.
Yeah, I had stock down on Pala'ie Naiotaote. He was actually benched in the second half. We asked Clancy Pendergast about, like, why did we see Jordan Iosefa in that role? And he said that Pala'ie couldn't maintain gap control. And I didn't notice it during the game, but when you watch it on rewatch, mm-hmm. there were times where he'd go inside, and then the play would later develop a couple seconds later, and they would run right where Pala'ie was supposed to be. You know, that's something that Clancy Pendergast said on Wednesday was uncharacteristic of Pala'ie. That's something that Clancy trusts Pala'ie to do at this point of his young career, but he said it was a very uncharacteristic game for him, and that's why they had to make those switches. But stock down for Pala'ie.
He's an aggressive player. He's going to attack plays in different ways than maybe Cam Smith does. But when you're playing a team like Arizona State with a running back like Eno Benjamin, who can make a guy miss, you can break a tackle behind the line of scrimmage, you have to stay in your gap. You have to be gap sound in that regard, or else you're going to give up some big plays. You know, similar to what Bryce Love does for Stanford, he can break a tackle in the backfield or at the line of scrimmage. And then if you're not sound in your gaps, then there's an opening. He can take advantage of it, and that's what Benjamin did in this game, running for 185 yards on 29 carries. So you give him credit for being good, but Pala'ie, you had a bad game. What I didn't understand, mini rant here, is like, this week, asking Clancy Pendergast, like, well, is Pala'ie going to play a different position now that Cam Smith's back? No, I just benched him for the second half. So am I going to move him into a starting role somewhere else? No, that doesn't make any sense. I feel like people weren't paying attention to why he was out. I asked Pala'ie, I was like, why did you, and he said, you'll have to ask the coaches, basically he got benched for it, which you didn't know for sure, because I was checking on the sidelines. Is he injured? Because I was looking, because he wasn't on the field, I was looking for him there, and it seemed like he was ready to go. He actually played one snap in the second half. They gave him the final snap of the third quarter. There was the drive started for Arizona State with one play before the end of the half, so they gave Jordan Iosefa a little bit more rest on that. But I thought Iosefa did a good job, going in there. That's not his natural position this season. They moved him back to that spot, but that shows his versatility there, but also gives a boost to Kanai Mauga. He's the guy that it was basically, they decided, can we leave Pala'ie there or who do we have more confidence in this game, Mauga or Naiotaote? And they gave the nod to Mauga in the second half. So that shows that he's also another freshman that is improving this season as well. I had my last stock down, I had Chuma Adoga and maybe slash health because the USC defense has been beat up. The quarterback's obviously beat up. But Chuma Adoga, this was the Now, granted, a couple of the early games were because they were giving some extra playing time to Clayton Bradley, but this was the fifth game where he did not play the full complement of snaps. He left before the final drive of the first half, and you could see he's kind of hobbling back to the line. They're trying to spike the ball, and he's like, they're like yelling at him to hurry up to get back to the line because, his knee was bothering him. He had his right knee examined. He ended up deciding to go with Jaleel McKenzie. Jaleel McKenzie did pretty good in there, but Chuma Adoga is their, their best NFL prospect on that line. He's the most athletically talented guy. They need him to be healthy and go and get mad and be beast mode on somebody, because when he gets his hands on people and he gets mad, he can be a super talented offensive lineman, but he's got to get healthy first.
Yeah. Honorary mention, hold your breath, shotgun, / stock neutral.
No.
I said hold your breath, shotgun.
I'm not holding my breath.
For USC special teams. I thought that Reed Butteridge had a pretty good game. He was able to pin N'Keal Harry for the most part. And I thought Tyler Vaughn's having his first touchdown return, punt return for a touchdown was pretty good. But then, of course, you had that return, which is not the best. Granted, you had Christian Rector. He was out, and you had Eric Crumenhook in for him. And that you kind of saw that breakdown on the return. For N'Keal Harry.
Yeah, Eric Crumenhook went in to attack the blocker rather than going for the tackle. It didn't really make sense when you rewatch it. Now that is the position he was filling in for Christian Rector. They took Christian Rector off some special teams because, he was you know, he's playing almost every single defensive snap. I'll look here in just a second when you start talking about something, but I think he played all but one defensive snap this game. He was, you know, he was all over the place for them. So they took him off some special teams. But and when you have guys like your other two blockers are Austin Jackson and Elijah Vera Tucker, those guys usually aren't going to tackle anyone. So having a defensive lineman there, that helps with, in that regard, I guess. With so those are the three blockers in front of the punter on the thing. So, you know, those three guys are usually not the ones you want to make a tackle, because that means you're in danger there. But Greg Johnson lets N'Keal Harry get outside. Now, this leads me into my first, hurt on the sidelines. So
great transition, Chuckins.
Yeah, like exactly. You meant to do that, right?
Exactly. Sure, exactly.
Sure. So actually, I was on the Arizona State sideline for that play, and I actually have a picture. N'Keal Harry almost dropped that ball. Like he one of his fingertips is like extended backwards where the ball hits. You know, he catches it on the very tip of his fingertips. But before the play, someone on their sideline, one of the coaching staff, yells, 10, get to the 10-yard line. And N'Keal Harry's like, he's like shaking his head. He's like, no, seven. And he catches the ball on the 8-yard line. So if he was on the 10, maybe he was going backwards. You know, he may not be able to get his momentum or whatever it may be on that play. But you just hear N'Keal Harry, and N'Keal Harry overrules the coach on the sideline. He's like, no, coach, I got it, 7-yard line. And he catches the ball, and he gets outside on the other side and takes it up the sideline. A couple really nice blocks there. USC did not do a good job of containing there with Greg Johnson and Vavai Malapai. Those two are the two outside guys who have to stay outside. And Eric Cromanhook didn't do a good job. Also, Austin Jackson had a chance where if he just shoved one of the blockers into N'Keal Harry, it probably knocks him out of bounds. But, you know, you're an offensive lineman. You're not used to going and running downfield trying to tackle somebody. USC, like you said, with the special teams, they had tried to kick the ball away from Harry. They did some directional punting and stuff. That's what they did on that play. It worked really well earlier in the game. N'Keal Harry, I couldn't see exactly what he did before the game. I mean, before that play, but he did enough to get over to it. Almost dropped it, but catches it and takes it to the house. Ends up being the crucial game-winning touchdown. Is it puts them ahead?
Debatable, but yes.
Also, game winning means you go ahead.
Also, that catch that he made was unreal
against Iman Marshall. Yeah,
yes,
fantastic.
Unreal. It was ridiculous. For Hurt on the sideline, a lot of people were wondering, are there any differences in practice that we're seeing this week? One notable difference that I've actually talked about on this podcast is they actually made, during scout team, a play didn't go right, and they made them do it again, which sounds simple and like, should they already be doing this? But they're doing it now.
I've seen them do a little bit in the past.
But the difference was the attitude, because, you know, it was screen pass to Velus. Velus was kind of going through the motions, and Dominique Davis comes up and just pops the ball out. Velus fumbles the ball. And so you heard a coach go, "We're doing it again. We're doing it again. Velus, you're doing it again." So they did it again. And Velus made the play, made the catch, and it was a better showing. So I think having that a little bit of energy and trying to make sure you're getting it right, not just going through the motions, is at least a good improvement.
Yeah, and that's a great transition again. Great job, Keeley.
It's like we almost make a rundown. We don't. So
we don't. Speaking of Velus Jones, the Chucky doll. We finally found out what the Chucky doll stands for. So if you haven't noticed, there's been some pictures of Velus Jones when he gets off the plane, I think in Utah. You know, he's carrying around the Chucky doll from the Child's Play movie series, the film series. And he knew the character's name and everything, Charles Lee Ray or something. I wrote it in my story on Velus Jones, but he was all about it. He knew it. And the reason why he carries around the Chucky doll is because the wide receiver's motto, I guess, their creed, is to stay dangerous. So that's what they break down their huddles on, their position huddles and stuff. And Velus said, you know, I gotta be like Chucky. I gotta stay dangerous. So he carries around the Chucky doll. And he said he's my little sidekick for Halloween and stuff too. But it's not just been Halloween. It's something he's had all season long. And congratulations to Velus, because he stayed dangerous and got his first touchdown, first career touchdown. I know it's really meant a lot to him to get that one, because he's come so close this season. He got tackled on the 3-yard line. Got tackled on the 2-yard line. Keeley's messing with fidget spinners and tossing them all over the place. Who knows what's going on in this studio right now? But Velus Jones gets his touchdown there, and it's one that meant a lot to him, but it also meant a lot to his teammates. I mean, Tyler Vaughns threw for a touchdown, had a punt return for a touchdown, caught a touchdown, 3-touchdown performance. We didn't even mention him yet.
Oh, true. He should have been on stock up. My bad.
Yeah,
Tyler.
But he also did drop the potential touchdown. True. So that's why he just stays unchanged.
Classic stock neutral
situation.
No,
he stays unchanged. Anyways, He had three touchdowns in this game, and he said, you know, I asked him about Velas because they're good friends. He said, that made my day right there. Of all the things that happened in the game, he said, that made my day. And Michael Pittman, you know, was excited for him as well. You know, there's a lot of guys that ran and were, you know, super excited in the end zone with him. So it was good to see Velus Jones get in, especially after he's helped create some other touchdowns by getting down inside the 5-yard line but not getting in himself.
For sure. My favorite part is that when you asked him, he kind of didn't know what to say about the Chucky doll. He's like, well, the motto is dangerous and Chucky is a dangerous doll. There's a long pause where he was trying to figure out how to connect the two, but I thought it was funny. The other thing I had for Hurdle on the sideline, my last thing, was Drevno was asked on Tuesday, what changes would you make to the offensive line? What have you seen? He didn't want to go into the past. He didn't want to. He was like, we're starting fresh. We're looking forward. But he said, if you watch me on Wednesday, I'll make changes and you'll see what I do. And one of the changes that I saw was that he made all three centers, Justin Dedich, Brett Nealon and Tole Lobenon stay after practice and do some extra snapping and almost like a conditioning portion of snapping. And so I thought that was interesting because Tole Lobenon has took it upon himself to do some snapping after practice, but you haven't seen all three snapping and working on that after practice. So I thought it was an interesting development.
And Toa was actually here. He was a freshman playing for Tim Drevno when Drevno was the offensive line coach in 2014, I believe it was.
Yeah.
I'm terrible with years, but and he said that, you know, I asked him about the different snapping and, you know, how's it, you know, does it change this week with Tim Drevno? He said, we've actually been talking about it. We always talk time to time because he was my coach as a freshman. So those two guys are really close. You know, I actually had it on my Hurdle on the sideline that Toa said in this game, said when I talked to him on Tuesday, he's like, I don't want to jinx it, but I think this could be a perfect snapping game. Now, he struggled in the last game. There were snaps all over the place, and Jack Sears did a really nice job of, you know, being able to kind of field all the snaps that were in the different quadrants, as we say, and you had the gif of all of them, you know, kind of posted together, so you can see that they were kind of, there was not a lot of snaps straight to them. There was not a lot of consistency with the snaps.
Yeah, if you want to go on the Peristyle, I posted it on the VIP board about I put together every, at the point where Jack Sears caught the ball, I took a screenshot and I put it all together in a GIF so you could just see the inconsistency and where the ball was all around in the strike zone.
And Toa, to his credit, says, I think this could be a perfect one. So I think he's got a little bit more confidence with Tim Drevno being the coach. I think that, you know, I think he's getting more comfortable with that whatever you call it, dead ball grip, gripping the ball at the top of the sphere rather than, you know, the spherical cone rather than in the middle on the laces and stuff. So I think he's getting more comfortable with that. And hopefully you'll see that the USC improves in that area this week.
To be fair, though, when I interviewed him earlier in the season, he said he'd get it fixed the next game. So we'll
see.
But
he said perfect.
No, but we'll
perfect,
see.
Perfect.
We'll see. Do you have anything else for Hurdle on the sideline? No. Moving on to agree, disagree.
What you got?
Jack Sears should be the starter for the rest of the season.
Disagree. I think JT Daniels has earned the right to start. You know, he won the job in fall camp. You know, I don't think his injury precludes him from starting this week. I think he comes back. If you give him the same game plan that you gave Jack Sears, I think there's more success there. I think they've asked him to do a little bit too much, too quickly. Whereas Jack Sears are like, all right, we're going to scrap the original game plan. We're going to basically simplify everything and we'll go from there. And, you know, he had success with it. I think you start with that and you build some more things into it. Now, if JT struggles, if he throws three interceptions in the first half, then maybe at halftime you make that change to Jack Sears, because I saw his confidence grow throughout that game. And I think he would be, you know, he could come in and make a difference in a game. But then you would have a big controversy. But right now, I think it's JT Daniels.
Well, we're just telepathy right now with our transitions. My next agree disagree is, if JT struggles against Oregon State, Helton will put in Jack Sears. Or should or will?
Should, yes. I would agree with that. Will he, though? That's the more debatable agree disagree. I don't think he will. I think they would suffer through, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Suffer through. Really?
Yeah.
After the changes he's made and he knows that he...
No, I don't think it's going to happen that he's going to struggle.
I thought you said that Helton wouldn't do it. I was like, you never know.
No, I don't think he would. I think they would struggle through. But I don't think they're going to struggle through.
Okay, touche. So in that sense, do you think it is desperate times for USC football right now?
In what regard would you say desperate? That's
meaning like Clay Helton knows that he needs to win these games.
Well, yeah, but every coach knows they need to win every game.
Okay, sure, if we want to get esoteric. But I'm just saying, like,
I don't even know Esso. I know Eno, but not Esso.
Meaning, if Clay Helton could put in Jack Sears in a relative amount of time if JT struggles, because it's like, you got to win at all costs. Granted, he did say that before ASU and they didn't win. So what is all costs?
I also had a teammate named Tarek too. So S-O-N-T. Anyways, I don't think it's, I mean, I think that he's coaching for his coaching life in that regard. And I think that's why you saw the changes, because he knows that he's coaching for his coaching life. So he might be more quick to do things that way, but I think he's going to live and die with JT Daniels.
Makes sense. USC will be 3-1 in November.
Yeah. Probably. Probably 3-1.
Really?
You don't think they're going to be 3-1?
I think 2-2.
What? Who are they going to lose to?
I don't know, but this team.
They can blow out Oregon State. I think the Cal losing streak continues for the Golden Bears. I think they beat UCLA, maybe a little bit closer than it should be, and then they lose to Notre Dame. But I think they could even beat Notre Dame. I've said it all along. If the offensive line gets fixed, and what just happened? They changed offensive line coaches, so now I got a little renewed energy that might happen.
See, my radar, I feel like my radar on this team was pretty good. Like, I called the loss to ASU. But with this new change and like Drevno, I wasn't expecting the changes, so my radar is a little off. I got to recalibrate after this game.
Boop.
Yeah.
Boop.
Because now my gut was really strong heading into last week, but now it's a little...
No, your gut's been terrible for the last 3 weeks.
Excuse me? Who predicted?
I'm referring to your actual gut.
Oh.
You've been sick for like 3 weeks, so yeah.
Yeah, no, my for real gut sucks, but my football gut is great.
Okay.
That's the difference. Finally, Clay Helton will be the head coach next season.
Agree.
Really? Yeah.
Because, as I said, I think they're going 3-1 in the month. And if they go 0-4, then yes, he's definitely not going to be the coach. But 3-1, definitely is going to be the coach. If they go 2-2, then there's some more question marks, especially if it's lost to UCLA and lost to Notre Dame. Then you might see him out. But I don't think that's going to happen. So I'm going to agree that he will be the coach.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a logical standpoint.
Lynn Swann wants to stand behind him. Lynn Swann doesn't want to make that change. And as we talked about on our live show a lot, there's that power vacuum. There's no president right now. Everyone's kind of arguing for power, I would say. It's not like a true power struggle inside the athletic department and school and boosters and stuff, but like no one wants to give up power. So everyone's just trying to, you know, place themselves a little bit higher, a little bit higher. I don't think there's like, it's not like Godfather where someone's going to go around and kill all the bosses to take over full power of everything, that type of power struggle. But I think that everyone's just trying to inch their way up the power chain a little bit, and no one's going to give away power. So therefore there's a little bit of vacuum because there's no one has the true power.
Power.
No one man should have all that power. Except for me.
Individual. Yeah. I mean, I think Lynn Swann feeling like he needed to reaffirm and give a vote of confidence for Clay kind of tells you where things are at right now.
It tells you where he stands, at least, that he wants to be behind Clay Helton. Now, if you lose all four games by 30 points, that changes things a lot.
Without a doubt.
But at this point, he wants to be behind him. So that's why I agree that he will be the head coach next year.
Okay. That makes sense.
Okay.
Do you have any for me? Last week, you threw me a curveball.
Nah, I tricked you up last week.
Oh. Moving on to questions. John Johnson, that's a fun name, John Johnson. John wrote, can the number of high injuries be attributed to a lack of physical practices? The players aren't in hitting shape and don't practice physical techniques enough to avoid injuries. Obviously, some of the injuries are random bad luck, but if you learn how to be physical, use good technique, and have the right training, doesn't that alleviate the injury problem?
I don't know about alleviate, but I think they would be better off if the bodies were conditioned a little bit more for the contact and stuff. You know, if you're a boxer, you don't get into the ring for a fight and not have sparred. You have to know how to take a punch a little bit. And football, there's a lot of contact, so you have to be able to know how to take contact. You got to know, you have to know to when to cover up your body a little bit and different things like that. Now, I don't think those are necessarily the answer for all the injuries they've had, but I think it wouldn't hurt if their bodies were a little more conditioned to the contact that they've received.
Yeah, I think that your body gets used to a level of contact. And if you're the first time you're having full on contact is every Saturday, you have to brace up a little bit. You're not as loose. I mean, you always bring up your playing days. I'm going to bring up my playing days. Okay. So in volleyball, we had to do a lot of like flips, diving, stuff like that, like hitting the ground. And I was out for like a week and a half. I came back and it just hurt. I was like, I cannot just fling myself to the ground right now and do some rolls. Like, this just sucks. But like, when you're in it, if you told me, like, I could just run at the floor and do like, and know how to dive well and do all this stuff. But if you have time off, if you're not doing all the time, it hurts and you're not doing it well.
Yeah. If I try to pitch now, like, I'm sore for like 4 days in a row and, or like 4, 5, 6 days in a row. Whereas, you know, in college, you're throwing every day. So you're like, oh, I'm good to go the next day, or, you know, a day off or whatever it is. The body is an amazing thing. The human body is one of the greatest wonders of the world, because if you condition it enough, it will get used to it. That's why, like, people don't understand my sleep habits. I sleep 4 to 6 hours most nights, but my body is used to it. Like, I've
conditioned your body is used to a level of caffeine.
That also helps, yeah. And also, because of the level of caffeine I intake, I have to give it more at certain times than, you know, some other people may. So because the body will adapt to things. The body is so adaptable. It's an amazing thing that it does. But that's the same thing with contact. The body will get used to and adapt to the level of contact that it's used to it. But if you don't give it that at all, then, you know, it's going to be different when you get hit. You know, a boxer can take a punch. Like, a boxer gets in a bar fight, he can take that punch a lot better than Joe Schmo that works in an office.
That's a great analogy. Very true. He also wants to know, are the habits of thud tackling coming into games, or is this a team of bad tacklers?
That's a really good question there. You know, I think it's a little bit of both. I think when you thud all the time, you kind of expect a guy to go down at times.
If you look at Arizona's last week's game, a lot of the tackles look like thud.
Yeah.
The missed tackles look like you expected the opponent to stop at first contact, which happens in thud.
Now, let's get an analogy, like a guy like Bubba Bolden. In high school, when Bubba Bolden hits a guy and he hits a wide receiver, and that wide receiver is a 6 foot guy that's 160 pounds or whatever it is, you know, that guy goes down. And Bubba Bolden is a big hitter, and he was used to doing that. And that was one of the things they worked on teaching him the last year plus, I guess, before he left the program, was that, hey, you got to wrap up. You got to wrap up. This isn't high school anymore. You can't just hit a guy and expect him to go down. And he saw that with Marquise Stepp in one of the fall practices. He comes up and lays a big hit on Marquise Stepp. Marquise Stepp, like, takes 2 steps back, and, like, he, to convert the energy, he does a spin move, spins off of it, and runs for 30 yards. And they're like, Bubba, you got to wrap up. You can't just hit. And that's something that you, like, if you're all the time is you're just hitting somebody and they go down, you expect them to go down. Same with if you're doing thud in practice, you hit them and you're like, okay, that's the end of the play. That's what you get used to. Same thing with the adaptability of the body is the same thing that your adaptability of the mind. You expect that person to be down. So you got to teach that. It's going to be tackling. You got to take them all the way, whether it's the dummies or whatever it is. You have to actually go to the ground with things to get used to that. And yes, I think it's partly a thud. I don't think it's necessarily that it's just like, oh, these guys are terrible tacklers, but they don't practice it a ton. So yeah, it doesn't help them in that regard. I think some of the guys, like Cameron Smith, is a terrific tackler. When he gets his hands on you, you're pretty much going down. When he misses the tackle, it's like Deontay Burnett dropping a pass. And you're like, what just happened? I just see?
What?
I don't think I saw that correctly. Something's wrong with my eyes.
Yeah. So could you say that tackling is...
You could say that. In the Arizona State game, for sure.
We got sound effects, and I haven't had a good place to use it.
Because you just don't know how to use it.
Okay, well, whatever. You take the sound effects for it next time.
Okay.
Finally.
They had 9 missed tackles in this game. Which is not anywhere close to what they had. Was it the Utah game that 16, I think it was?
Utah was rough.
Yeah. So they did a little bit better than last week.
Improvement, I guess? Finally, we have
Stock up? That's not true.
No.
Well, the difference is the Utah game, they were making a lot of hits and they were behind the line of scrimmage. So a guy would break a tackle, but there would be someone else there. Whereas this week, just like we talked about with the gap control of Pali and Atiote, someone would make that hit. There wasn't necessarily always someone there because there were some open gaps and stuff. So that's the difference. You mean it looks like Arizona State, you're like, wow, they didn't tackle well, or they tackled better than they did against Utah. But because of the difference is that there were multiple guys there. Was it Utah or maybe in Colorado they had that many? I don't remember. I'll look it up in a minute.
Alrighty. Well, we have one final question from our friend Joan. Who says, Shockin and Keeley, what are your personal opinions of how these minor changes 8 games in will really affect play? Rumors have been abundant that Clay has called most of these games anyway. And lastly, I think the Callaway interview prior to the Arizona State game was embarrassing to USC. He seemed disoriented and unable to process the questions well. I know nothing about Oregon State as they are an afterthought. What are your thoughts?
You know, I don't think the change is bad. I think change at this point in the season was good because USC was not playing well. I don't think the rumors were true about Clay Helton calling the plays. I think we talked about that a little bit earlier. But so I think this is a positive. The team has responded well. When you have change, it's either going to be a positive and you're going to react well to it, or it's going to be a negative and it's going to be, you know, even worse afterwards. So when things aren't going well and you make change, it's going one of two directions. I think based on the practices that we saw this week and the kind of the what people have said that we talked to, it seems like they have a little bit more energy on that offensive side. I think it's going to be positive. I think the offense is going to come out and play pretty well. You know, now it's just up to the coaches to make some solid play calls and we'll see how they do.
Yeah, I think it would be hypocritical for me to, after all year saying that changes need to be made, once changes are made, to be like, well, it's too late, you know, like changes are changes. And the fact that if it looks like, as it does right now, that Clay Helton will be back next season, I think it should be encouraging for USC fans that Clay Helton has made moves that need to happen, one, but are really hard to do. I like, we've talked about how Clay Helton has this loyalty gene and loyalty to a fault. And I thought that could carry over into next season if he returns. But the fact that Clay Helton shows that, okay, he's aware of reality. He's aware of things that need to get fixed and things that need to be done is positive. So I think it's a good thing. Whether or not it makes a real impact in the last four games, I don't think is necessarily important. I think just the fact that there is a change can spark this team. And Shotgun has talked about it till he's been blue in the face, that this team needs something that they can need to rally around. And I think this could be the thing that, hey, we have new life. We have rejuvenation making a switch like this. Who knows? But I think that it was needed. Something needed to change. And going forward, this should be good for USC.
Yeah, I think it's going to be positive for them. And I think the offense, we'll see for sure on Saturday. If the offense comes out and plays well, that tells you pretty much all you need to know about this group. And maybe it's a little, not necessarily a full turning point, because this season, you know, the Pac-12 is pretty much out of the question unless Utah loses unexpectedly. So I think it's a slow, you know, potential turning point for the program. If Clay Helton is the guy next year and they're going to get back, I think this could be a starting point for that. Now, will it be? We'll see. But I think it could be a turning point for the program.
I feel like if Clay Helton surrounded himself with people who have experience and have a proven track record, I don't think Clay Helton can't be a head coach. You know,
Ryan's talked about it. He loved the hires at Cal. When Justin Wilcox takes over the head coach, first time head coach, he aligned himself with former head coaches as his coordinators. Now, those are guys that could potentially take your job. So if you're not confident in yourself, then you could be setting yourself up for failure. Those guys, you know, eventually take your job from you. But I think you have to do that. If you're a first time coach, get guys around you. Now, Clay has former head coaches on staff, or he did with Neil Calloway. He had his dad around. His dad was, but those guys haven't coached recently. I would get guys that are used to the players now. And it's also, there's a difference in, you know, style at UAB in Houston versus USC for sure. So if you could, you know, get a guy like Jeff Tedford, if he was available at the time when Justin Wilcox took over, you know, that's a great hire. Someone, someone of that vein who's, you know, coached at a Pac-12 program before, if you can bring him in as a coordinator, that's great. Even if it, you know, they, you know, a guy like North Turner in the NFL, terrible head coach, but one of the best offensive coordinators there is. If you can get a guy like that who's really good as a coordinator, but hasn't had success as a head coach, then that's terrific for you, because then they can also tell you like, hey, this didn't work for me. This did work for me as a head coach type of thing. I think, you know, it's like any CEO of a company. The CEO can be the smartest person ever, but if everyone under him is terrible at their jobs, that company ain't doing nothing. However, the CEO can be, you know, not great, but if he has great people around him, they can help boost him to new heights. So I think that's similar with Clay Helton, whereas he's a young head coach. He doesn't have a ton of experience. If he surrounds himself with the right people, this team could go in the right direction, definitely.
Agreed, especially with the talent that USC has. You don't need that much to drive a Ferrari forward. Just get an experienced driver.
Yeah, you just got to get someone who knows how to drive a manual.
True.
Where it seems like everybody on this with this offense is like, I don't know what to do with the stick thing in the middle. Why does it not go from P to D? I don't get it.
already. That's going to wrap it up for the podcast.
One quick thing. The missed tackles. USC had 9 missed tackles against Arizona State, 16 against Utah, 9 against Colorado. Do you really remember any of the missed tackles against Colorado? No, because they won and they were there multiple guys a lot of times. Even with Utah, you know, they were blown out, but it wasn't like there was these 80-yard plays, you know, these big, long, 46-yard run, this 45-yard run to finish things off. Whereas, you know, this game, it seemed like, you know, there was no one there to help out when one tackle was missed.
Agreed. You predict a USC blowout win?
Yeah, I do.
I do too. We'll see. As I said, my radar is off, so we'll see how this my recalibration goes.
I think it's the intestinal issues that are throwing you off.
That's true. My gut all over the place. But that's Shotgun. I'm Keely. Thanks for listening to the Family Feud podcast. We'll see you next week.